all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, November 2nd. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zomers is with us in the producer chair. And coming up this hour, Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And then tomorrow, we'll have Joe Zepecki joining us to talk about the final Marquette poll before the election, which is coming out at midday today. So we'll talk to Joe about that tomorrow morning. To reach us, you can call 715-388-7155. Email us at radio at upnorthnewswi.com. You can also follow us at that website and look for Up North News WI on social media, or follow me, Pat Kreitlow, Up North on Facebook, or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. It is a weird Wednesday for me. It's our first Wednesday of this new early morning show, but it also means it's my first Wednesday in a long time without Kirk Bangsted and Kristen Lyerly side by side here. We were doing a Wednesday night program for a while, coincidentally called the Up North Podcast. And then Up North News was provided the opportunity to have a radio show weekday mornings from 8 to 11. And now Up North News Radio is heard at 6 to 8 in the morning. There's no way in hell we're getting Kirk Bangsted up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Kristen Lyerly's not going to do that as an OBGYN because she's got to be up at all hours of the day and night anyway. So why get up any earlier than you have to? So it's a little weird not to have them here. But I can promote the fact that starting tonight, they are bringing back the Wednesday night show. And on Kirk's Up North podcast tonight, he and Kristen are going to talk to Randy Bryce. Others know him as the Iron Stash, who was kind of like a Paul Revere on his horse trying to forewarn people that Scott Walker was out to break the unions. And then they're going to talk to Joel Jacobson and Leah Spicer, two state assembly candidates who could save the veto pen for Governor Evers if he were to win, but needs to hold off a Republican supermajority in the legislature. Otherwise, they can override his vetoes all the way through. As we look ahead to an election 6 days from now, again, a reminder that in-person absentee balloting is going on right now at your local clerk's office. Be in contact with them to find out what you need in order to be able to vote early. If you have an absentee ballot at home, it's probably a little too late to mail it back, so fill it out, get a witness to sign it, and take it directly back to your local clerk's office. Earlier in the morning, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel came out with its editorial board for the entire USA Today Wisconsin network, endorsing both Mandela Barnes for Senate and Tony Evers for governor. I mentioned in the last hour that the editorial notes that Ron Johnson is Wisconsin's worst senator in decades. He has played fast and loose with the facts for years. He has spread conspiracies about everything from the elections to COVID-19 to claiming sunspots cause global warming. He is just somebody who is doing all of this, all while having, as the editorial board calls it, an appallingly slim list of accomplishments for 12 years in office. He even took a pass on trying to help Wisconsin workers when a large state contractor was moving jobs out of state, saying, quote, "It's not like we don't have enough jobs here in Wisconsin." Then over on the gubernatorial side, the Journal Sentinel editorial board writes, "Tony Evers has earned a second term. Tim Michaels is a Trump acolyte." And the editorial says, "Tim Michaels is where he is today because of Donald Trump's endorsement in the Republican primary in August, an endorsement that requires Michaels to toe the Trump line. At times," they write, "Michaels seems to have only a rudimentary knowledge of the duties and responsibilities of the job he is seeking. Working for his family's highway and pipeline construction business, Michaels has spent years away from Wisconsin at homes in Connecticut and New York City. Recently, he called on Governor Evers to stop prison paroles altogether, a move that isn't possible under state law. Michael suggested that he would not enforce the state's abortion law that makes the procedure a felony, saying that he wouldn't arrest any doctors, but then his campaign immediately had to walk that back, And Michaels has long embraced an extreme position on abortion. Meanwhile, Evers has announced a plan to return money to taxpayers from a record surplus while increasing funding for K-12 schools and working on climate change and other matters, and frankly, growing jobs here in Wisconsin. So the editorial concludes, "We urge voters to give Governor Tony Evers a second term as governor and to fire Ron Johnson after 2 6-year terms and send Mandela Barnes to the Senate. If you can't bring yourself to vote for a Democrat, consider passing over these two races and voting in the remaining races on your ballot," the editorial concludes. "Make no mistake, democracy is on the ballot this year. Please vote for candidates who have shown they believe in it." That's a very powerful ending to an editorial. First off, for any editorial to suggest skipping voting in races if you just can't bring yourself to vote for the Democrat. Now, obviously, I would take issue with that. But either way, when a newspaper editorial is telling you you're better off skipping a race than voting for the wrong person, they really believe that that's the wrong person. And that's what they see in Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels. And an editorial that closes out with the word please. You know, usually editorial boards are rather full of themselves and say, oh, this is how we think, and you should think the same thing. But they conclude again, democracy is on the ballot this year. Please vote for candidates who have shown they believe in it. Everything about Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson says they will go along with any authoritarian tendencies that would render your vote useless. So don't waste that vote this November. We'll have more headlines coming up after this. You're up north. When I was rattling off this day in history, November 2nd, I neglected to mention that on this day in 2016, the Cubs won the World Series, their first one in about 108 years, over Cleveland, whose drought is now the longest lasting at 74 years since they won the World Series back in 1948. And in fact, on the list of World Series droughts, the longest droughts, Cleveland's number one. Number three would be the Brewers. The Brewers and Seattle Pilots have now gone 54 seasons without a World Series win. The Philadelphia Phillies had their first World Series game, game three, after two games in Houston, and they are now up 2-1 after unleashing 5 home runs on the starting pitcher there. Otherwise, in sports, the NFL trading deadline came and went yesterday. Every team in the NFC North made some kind of a move, except the Green Bay Packers. So basically they're saying you get what you get. So bear that in mind as we take on Detroit and then the rest of the division coming out through the rest of the season. And the Milwaukee Bucks have another game against Detroit coming up tonight, hoping to go 7-0 on the season at this point. Among some of the other stories that we're following today with 6 days left until the election, there's the tracking of money and the final monthly finance reports that came in for the various campaigns. And I'm not going to bore you with, you know, a whole list of dollar amounts. You can certainly look them up yourself. But it is worth noting that Tim Michaels gave his campaign more than $2 million during this last monthly reporting period, including another $1 million check on Thursday. Imagine that. You're running for office, and on a whim, you can write yourself, your campaign, a check for $1 million. That puts Michael's total personal commitment into the race. Do you know? Do you want to let me pause for a minute while you take a guess? How much personal money has Tim Michaels put in? $18.7 million. Now that's along with there's funds from other folks with the Michaels Corporation that have donated as well, family members and such. And it brings us, you know, to this important point. Tim Michaels has said from the very beginning that he would divest himself from Michaels Corporation. the state's biggest construction company, the company that has something like $1 billion in contracts with the state, with state taxpayers, and says he will separate himself so that there's no conflict of interest involved. But much as was the case with Donald Trump, you can't do that. It's a family company. It's one thing for me to say that I'm going to completely separate myself from Courier Newsroom. I can do that. We have very separate bank accounts. We're not family. But I think most people recognized when Trump said, well, I'm just going to turn everything over to my children, my adult children, and you know, I won't see any benefit. You can't help but see a benefit. They're your family. They're not going to let you go to the poorhouse. What's good for them, even if there's an apparent conflict of interest, is good for you. And now if Tim Michaels were to win and become governor, he would oversee and have to sign some significant state contracts. That's part of the governor's job, including with his own company, which he says will continue to bid on contracts, continue to try to be the low bidder to, you know, get some of that business, some of that business that over the years has enabled Tim Michaels to write a check for $1 million just last week and has now put in this astounding amount of money into the campaign, all on his own. It's a stupefying number, $18.7 million in personal money. And for those folks that, you know, would say that's how he won the primary, was essentially buying, you know, the publicity, it comes back to, you know, what we heard from our caller Tom from last hour, along with Dick Ostman, and what we're going to hear from Matt Rothschild in our next half hour from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, that it's not just the Citizens United decision, but the Buckley v. Valeo decision in the 1970s that really is at the root of this. And one of the more confounding things to me in all of my years as a journalist and then a politician and now a political journalist is that we still haven't found a way to undo the damage wrought by the Buckley case in the 70s that essentially equates money with free speech and somehow says that no matter how wealthy somebody else is, that's free speech, same as my free speech, even though I don't have the money to get my speech out into the public square. As a human, from person to person, yes, we are all very equal. We can all stand in the public square and we can all state our opinion, get up on our soapbox and try to convince each other. But the moment you leave that public square and go home and put on the TV, then somebody can spend $10 million and you can't. Well, that's not equal speech by any stretch of the imagination, Aaron.
Definitely not. That's something that has always mystified me. But I do have one question that there may or may not be an answer to. Is there a way to combat this? Like a concrete way, what would we do as a society if this were overturned or made illegal somehow and people are doing it and trying to disguise it?
And therein lies the rub, as the cliche goes, is how do you word a constitutional amendment in such a way? Now, there are some things that you can do relatively easily, coming to the Citizens United part of the equation, and that is making clear that corporations are not people, contrary to what, you know, multimillionaire Mitt Romney and others say when they say corporations are people, my friend. Well, we're not treating them as people in all the ways that people can be treated. In other words, we can't put a corporation in jail. We can't really give a corporation the death penalty for, you know, serious wrongdoing. Again, there are some heavy penalties that nearly constitute it, but you can't equate the two. Just like people who, like Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson, who say government should be run like a business. No, government is not a business. Business and the marketplace are separate entities from the person. We always talk about, or conservatives always talk about, the marketplace as if the marketplace is the foundation of society, when it's not. The home and the people in the home are the foundation of society. And that's what should be protected more. That's whose free speech rights should be protected more. So step one is to make clear the division between personhood and corporate personhood. Then the next thing you do is you identify a way to have either limits. You can have limits on either contributions or spending. But, you know, the Supreme Court has interpreted laws in a way that says, well, some people and now some companies can do whatever they want with their money as much as they want. And, you know, that's not the case. You know, that can lead to essentially near monopoly power. You know, so look, we put limits on speech. We can put limits on firearms. You know, you're not supposed to be able to go out and buy a tank. To that degree, there are limits that can be put on the finances that go into a campaign. Now, one way is to take it all out and then have publicly financed campaigns. I'm not even a great big fan of that necessarily, because I believe that there is a role for somebody who wants to show their support for somebody. You know, usually it's like writing a check for $5 or for $100 or something like that. But being able to write a check for $1 million, somewhere in there is a line and or a standard that has to apply. And look, maybe there's some more imaginative people like me that can come up with that standard. Maybe that standard should be, you know, for state office. Maybe it's a percentage of the state budget or a percent or a factor of the salary. I mean, think about it. We're spending $100 million for a presidential race where the salary is $400,000 a year. I had to raise $200,000 for a state Senate race that pays $50,000 a year. So somewhere in there are the right numbers. And it's a great question for Matt Rothschild that we will ask about. And we'll also ask him a bit about this story that is going to be in next weekend's New York Times Magazine. It's already published online. It's called The Democrats' Last Stand in Wisconsin. With the GOP in control of a majority of state houses, Democrats are fighting for seats in battleground states. Is it too late? And it mostly revolves around Leah Spicer, who I mentioned earlier in the hour is going to be the guest tonight on the Up North podcast with Kirk Bangstad and Kristen Lierley. Now, Leah she gives the story in there about how she had to be asked multiple times before she would agree to run for assembly in this relatively swing district. It's something that State Representative Francesca Hong identified for us earlier as, you know, men will self-recruit. You know, Tim Michaels will go, I got money. You know, I got an attitude. I'll run for governor. Women frequently have to be asked up to six times to run for something. And Leah Spicer is. And you'll see what a hero she is if you were to read this article in the New York Times Magazine. But it is also a very comprehensive history of both the Democratic Party of Wisconsin over the last few years, but also the National Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, and a terrible decision, again, in the 1970s, that said, we're going to focus so much more heavily on federal elections, because if you can win the presidency and control the Congress, that takes care of everything. State legislatures don't do much of anything. They'll either stay Democratic or Republicans will win it and they'll be inconsequential. And that's when you know, the Morgan Freeman narrator voice would come up and say, it was not inconsequential. And it would turn out to be a terrible decision. And apart from the occasional blip, like Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, state parties and then down to county parties have been, you know, an afterthought in too many ways, especially in states that are solidly red, at least in Wisconsin. You know, I have been part of those fights about how much support a state party should be getting and how much support they should be giving to their county parties, as opposed to, you know, outside groups and interest groups and you know, other materials at the top of the ticket. Those are fair discussions to have, but you can't have them until you first decide that, you know, your state parties are worth supporting. And beyond the parties, that the infrastructure of messaging is worth supporting. These two entities that I belong to, Courier Newsroom, which gives you Up North News, and Civic Media, which gives you this new network of Wisconsin stations, these things are terribly overdue in terms of a permanent infrastructure compared to the Death Star ecosystem of right-wing media. But at least we're here now. We're on your doorstep, and we're only going to grow, and we're thankful to have you be a part of it. Matt Rothschild is coming up next to talk more about this. You are Up North.
That idea is just the worst.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
7:33 on a Wednesday morning on what's going to be just a gorgeous day all across the state, unseasonable and nice as we head into this second day of November. We're in the final 6 days before Election Day. And as we've pointed out, the many inconsistencies or hypocrisies of Senator Ron Johnson, I wanted to call attention just to one more because we haven't played this specific clip yet from former President Barack Obama's visit to Wisconsin this past weekend. And listen to the fury with which Obama hits Senator Ron Johnson, who consistently says, I'm not out to destroy Social Security. I'm out to save it. And yet at the same time says it should be discretionary in the budget, which is the same thing as saying that he wants to destroy it without actually coming out and saying it. Here's what the former president said.
Some of you here are on Social Security. Some of your parents are on Social Security. Some of your grandparents are on Social Security. You know why they have Social Security? Because they worked for it. They worked hard jobs for it. They have chapped hands for it. They had long hours and sore backs and bad knees to get that Social Security. And if Ron Johnson does not understand that, if he understands giving tax breaks for private planes more than he understands making sure that seniors who've worked all their lives are able to retire with dignity and respect, he's not the person who's thinking about you and knows you and sees you, and he should not be your senator from Wisconsin. I mean, the message he's sending is pretty clear. If you're related to him, if you donate to his campaign, you get a deal. If you're not, you're out of luck and you're on your own.
Truer words never spoken by the former president. Matt Rothschild joins us now from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign to talk a bit about that issue, all the money in politics and more. Matt, good to see you.
Hey, Pat, thanks for having me on and congrats on your morning show.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate that. When you are explaining to people, you know, so much of what you talk about deals with the situation of money that is flooding politics. But, you know, if you're going to talk about democracy itself, you have to talk not just about, you know, the election deniers that are out there, but also, frankly, I think you have to talk about this level of doublespeak on an issue where you say, I want to save this thing that I'm actually trying to kill, and I'm okay with that as long as I don't explicitly tell you that I'm shooting somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue. Apparently it's okay then, Matt.
Yeah, Ron Johnson is really vulnerable on this issue of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. For decades, politicians have been told to stay away from these issues, don't talk about privatizing these programs, not close to an election anyway. And Ron Johnson is so indifferent to the needs of everyday people that he just doesn't care. And so he'll say it anyway. He'll say it out loud. And that's why I think we heard the fury from President Obama, who really laid the hammer down on Saturday in Milwaukee on this issue. And I think it is this issue, the cutting of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, along with the abortion issue, that may actually do Ron Johnson in.
Now, that's something that will actually catch some of our listeners off guard, is that here's somebody with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign talking about these kitchen table issues, rather than, you know, as one caller put it last hour, and I don't mean to put all the pressure on him, but he speaks for many people who say, how come either Democrats, progressives, independents, how come they're not saying even more about the threat to democracy. And my response to them was, look, the threat to democracy is very real. It is part of the message. But we're now in a phase where what few undecided voters are left, you know, they're looking at the issues that you outlined before they make their final choices.
And really, it's about freedom and how we define freedom. How free are you if you're an elderly person who no longer gets Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid? How free are you if you're a woman or you're forced to have your rapist baby? You know, it's been too long that people on the progressive side have not embraced the concept, the very American fundamental concept of freedom, and just left it for the right to talk about. This is a progressive concept, freedom. And Ron Johnson wants to take the freedom of elderly people and the freedom of women away.
It's that freedom with your body as well as, you know, your vote that is so important. But let's turn back to the cash for a moment, simply because, again, they are just jaw-dropping numbers from anybody, frankly, and on the Republican side in this race. But for Tim Michels specifically, to be able to write himself another check last week, or write his campaign a check for $1 million and bring that total to somewhere north of $18 million of personal money, I'm going to ask it as basic as if somebody just stepped off the boat and is in America for the first time. When I say one person, $18 million of their own money, Matt, how can this be?
Well, it's got to change. I mean, it can be this way because the U.S. Supreme Court says it can be this way, and has said in a series of decisions, some going back to the late 19th century, that corporations are persons and money is speech. And so you either have to be a super rich individual like Tim Michels, who has gotten 3/4 of all his money from his own bank account, or you need to be a telemarketer constantly asking the super rich people all across the country to give them maximum donations to their campaigns, and then unlimited contributions to these outside groups that have been splattering all of our screens with mud for months and months now. I know I'm sick and tired of it, and I bet every single one of your listeners, Pat, is sick and tired of all these hideous negative ads that we've been seeing. And Ron Johnson has been chief among them, and his group's chief among them, painting Mandela Barnes as, you know, the most dangerous black man in Wisconsin. I mean, let's be clear, these were racist ads from top to bottom. That's what they were doing.
Yeah, along that line, I mean, yes, you look at the issues along with, you know, Johnson calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, which isn't true, and, you know, releasing all these violent criminals, which, you know, just isn't the case to the extent that they're saying. And then one of my favorites, it's a little bit off topic, but I just noticed a Washington Post article here that said in the 2 months before Halloween, there were 1,542 news stories about rainbow fentanyl, warning that dealers could slip this drug into trick-or-treating kids. And to this point, there has not been a single news story yet confirming that this happened anywhere in the United States. And yet, this is the thing, Matt, is that media will take and they'll run with the shiny object, and then you'll see, you know, that they see in these political ads, and completely lose sight of what's real for families, for voters, for small businesses and others.
Yeah. And, you know, they have to run the ads by the candidates. That's the law. They don't have to run the ads by the outside groups, but they want the money. And so they're grabbing the money. And the money's been pouring in. Look, one of the most obscene things in the Ron Johnson fundraising is he's gotten or benefited from $29 million from a PAC called the Wisconsin Truth PAC. Now, the Wisconsin Truth PAC is funded by two super rich individuals here in Wisconsin, Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply and Richard Eline, who actually lives in Lake Forest, Illinois. These were the two families that Ron Johnson got tax breaks to the tune of $200 million in just 1 year. And so they're paying them back here with a little gratuity, you know, $29 million of outside spending, telling people not to vote for Mandela Barnes. I mean, that is corruption. And I think people should be aware of that. You shouldn't have super rich people being able to elect a senator who will then give them tax breaks worth 10 times as much.
Well, exactly. When I get asked about it, when they say, well, you know, where's all the Democratic billionaires? And I said, yeah, you have to understand that when people are giving on the left, by and large, you know, they're making a contribution based in issues. On the Republican side, with the landscape it is now, it's not that they're making a contribution. Ms. Hendricks and the Elines and the others are making an investment. They're willing to spend money to keep more of the money that they're getting, literally getting from people like Ron Johnson, giving them, you know, these massive tax breaks. And it's as difficult as it is to want to believe, politics has become an investment just like anything else on Wall Street.
And they're great. They're getting a great return on their investment. I mean, if they're putting in $29 million right now, and they're getting, they got $200 million in 1 year, you know, you can't get that kind of a return anywhere in America. So I know they also probably believe in some of the same things Ron Johnson does, but isn't it convenient that they also get rewarded in their bank accounts? That's what's disgusting to me.
I'll tell you one thing that really sticks out for me that I know we haven't talked about here yet, because again, there's so many things in these political ads, but one of them is about how, in this case, Mandela Barnes, but it's used elsewhere, wants to unleash an army of IRS agents. 87,000 new IRS agents are going to be unleashed on the middle class. When, Matt, you and I both know that the reason the billionaires are putting that in their political ads is because they know all those new IRS agents aren't going after the middle class, but are finally going after the tax cheats at the very top.
Yeah. And for a long time, you know, the IRS wasn't going after the people at the top. And here again, this is just another way for the super rich to protect their bottom lines. And we should have the IRS going after the tax cheats at the top. Number one, that's where the money is, as the old bank robber used to say. And number two, you know, those super rich people shouldn't be able to dodge taxes all the time.
We're talking to Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about an election that is now 6 days away. And again, there's just so much to juggle through this all. We've covered some of the big races. Matt, I don't know the degree to which you're following some of the things down ballot, whether it's attorney general, secretary of state, state treasurer, or the legislative seats. But from your perspective, what do we know about the down ballot races that are just as important in many ways in Wisconsin politics?
Well, I think they're all going to be close. I think the attorney general's race is going to be close. I think Josh Call may hang on, but I think that's going to be really tight. I think the secretary of state race, which is really important, chances are will go to Doug LaFollette, just because he's got a name from God in Wisconsin. And also he's won, you know, 20 times already. But look, if he loses it and the Republicans defeat Governor Evers, they may destroy the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which they've all been talking about, and hand over the power of not only administering our elections, but certifying our elections to the Secretary of State's office if Amy Laudenbach wins that office. And then you'd have a partisan in charge of administering elections and deciding who wins elections. We don't want to see that here in Wisconsin if we want fair government, if we want every vote to count.
Let's take that step back for a second, because again, every state takes care of elections administration in their own way. And I was part of that wave of people elected in 2006 to the legislature. It was a Democratic wave. And one of the very first, if not the very first bill we did, was create a government accountability board. That was then replaced by Republicans once they took over with the current Wisconsin Elections Commission. Well, I'll ask you, as kind of an outside party to all this, which way should we be going?
Well, first of all, the Government Accountability Board was a tremendous development here for Wisconsin, and we were hailed in Wisconsin as being true reformers on how to, in a nonpartisan way, administer our elections. And the Government Accountability Board had a great reputation. Republicans destroyed it because they didn't want the Government Accountability Board to be participating with a special prosecutor who was going after Scott Walker, who was violating a statute at the time that said he couldn't coordinate with some of these outside groups. So they got rid of that and they made it into a bipartisan commission. I don't think their bipartisan commission is great, but it's much better than having a partisan elected official run the elections himself or herself.
And that's what we may be facing if Michaels wins and or the legislature gets a supermajority. And either way, if we get one or the other, Matt, we're going to need the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. We're going to need you and a whole lot of folks who, you know, don't walk away, but continue to be watchdogs on this. And for that, we're extremely appreciative, Matt. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Always enjoy being on with you, Pat.
All right. You have a great day. We're going to take one more break, and then we'll wrap up our discussions this hour. Just a reminder first that if you'd like to get our daily newsletter, you just have to go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Again, upnorthnewswi. Don't forget the WI. We would love to have you there. You can follow us on social media as well. And you can follow me on Facebook. Search for Pat Kreitlow Up North. We'll be back after this. You're Up North. What do you got for us here, Aaron?
That's the beginning of Fanfare for the Common Man by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
All right. Part of our music history segment from the last hour. I would like to definitely give credit here to Olivia Herkin from the Wisconsin State Journal, as I quote rather extensively from her story. I wanted to start yesterday as I was putting notes together about all the many referenda out there for school districts across the country. There are going to be 166 this year, including 81 that are coming up next week. That's the highest number since 2001. And while I don't think I don't have, oh, here we go. If all 42 of the operational referenda pass to fund things just like staffing and utility bills, that's up to $360 million in new spending and higher property taxes that'll be authorized just to fund operations at schools, not to build new schools, but just to operate them because of the spending constraints put in place by Republicans who say, we're not going to give you any more income tax money, which is progressive. We're going to make you use the local property tax so you guys take the heat, even though there's a $5 billion state surplus. Yes, I hit that a lot, but I just want to remind people, 81 ballot measures up next week that don't have to be that way if the legislature would work with the governor to properly manage our schools and our state economy. Gary from Sussex, appreciate you being here. What's on your mind today? Pleasure having you.
All right. I'm a conservative Republican, right? And when I was 21 years old, they enacted the law, Roe v. Wade, okay? And they were predicting at that time that Social Security for my generation at 21 years old, by the time I retire, there won't be enough money to pay for my Social Security. Now, I'm out there working really hard at 21, paying for all the older people, you know, the great generation and stuff like that, for their Social Security. Now that I'm 70 years old, I'm asking you, is it possible that because of all the millions of little kids that are not running around and adults now because of abortion, that we're in a crisis that we're in? And that, in my opinion, I support Ron Johnson. There is no way in the world that Ron Johnson wants to get rid of Social Security. And you Democrats, you really deep down know that, but you're just using this to be against them so you'd have people get scared.
I guess I'd be with you there, Gary, if I just knew what, you know, what his plan was. And right now, the only plan is to make it discretionary, which puts it on the chopping block. Not saying that that vote will happen to kill it, but a vote will happen. And you should, if anything, look for it to be reduced, not cut, rather than keeping the promises that we made to generations of Americans. This whole notion of, oh, it's all going to go away, it's insolvent. All the years that's been up, I've been all but screaming at people going, it doesn't have to. All you have to do is agree to fund it. We have the resources in this country to do it without overburdening the middle class. We only need a taxation system that isn't out of whack the way it was put, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, in the beginning of the Reagan era. Joe in Madison, appreciate you being here. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pat. Very fascinating show, as always. Just a rejoinder to Gary. He said that he wants to put it up for authorization every year. Just imagine what kind of a battle that's going to be to get full funding of your Social Security every single year. So
and it would just take attention off of everything else. Just crazy.
Yes, this, and the lobbying would be quite intense by those groups that seek to have every American be putting their money into a private fund. And good luck to you there. You're subject to the vagaries of the marketplace. We have a strong system that works really well. Raise the cap if we are looking at any kind of situation where we can't meet the full needs. The cap.
Yeah, there's certainly room. Certainly room for that, Joe. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good having you here. Wisco Paul joins us as well. Good to have you here, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for the show. Thanks for you and Kurt trying to flip at least some votes up north to blue. I'll repeat this about Gary. He voted for Trump twice. He said he'd vote for him again, so I guess he's down for treason. His candidate of choice is the governor of Florida, and I guess he's down for treason with Ron Johnson, because that's basically what it comes down to, and the money people. So Gary needs to get some new material, because he calls in once or twice a week with the same thing, and then he's got to mix abortion into it. So, you know, what can I say? We are the same age also.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it very much. And Robert from West Dallas, I think you're kind of talking along the same lines here after what you heard from Gary.
Yeah, exactly. So Channel 27 actually pinned Ron Johnson down. They said, what specifically would you do? Oh, it's not on the chopping block, but I'm going to make cuts and I'm going to raise the age. Well, those two factors are cuts, Guy. You should be able to figure this out, Gary. You're a pretty smart guy. Thank you.
Oh, you bet, Robert. Thanks. Good to have you here. And Dan from Monona joins us as well. But, you know, I got to tell you, Dan, before you start, I my very first radio talk show about 30 years ago, it was at WBKV in West Dallas. And it was mentioned, you know, if things ever get quiet, you know, just refer to Social Security as welfare and watch the phones light up in West Bend. Definitely the case there. And now it's you know, what does Ron Johnson want to do? Cut it or not? And Dan, what's your two cents on that?
Well, how short-sighted even these rich donors and Johnson are, that I heard if you cut Social Security, $600 million a month would be loss of the economy.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing here, is that when you talk about, like Tim Michaels does, Tony Evers paid people not to work. There's a common refrain. And if you did not have the economic stimulus checks when people weren't working because there was this pandemic, our economy would be in free fall. Instead, you now have a president who is forgiving some student loan debt, which is an immediate economic impact to local economies. Conversely, if you cut or eliminate, and I agree with Gary, that's more likely to be cut, not eliminate, but either way, that's money you're taking out of local economies. That's money that is not going toward people being allowed to pay rent to stay where they are and maybe have to consider moving into, you know, assisted living and nursing homes and things like that. We hear about spending. And while that is part of the equation, but every bit of that spending is also an investment to some degree. It's a matter of picking your targets. The thing that Tony Evers should be getting credit for is the very targeted ways that he has applied that pandemic stimulus relief so that the economy stayed strong in the state, didn't go under, and now we have that surplus. And the same can be said with everything from Social Security to student debt relief and so much more, is that rather than a one-size-fits-all plan, if you pick your targets, you're investing in the economy. Thanks so much for your time today. We'll see you again tomorrow morning here for Up North News Radio.